The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to winter time, correct? I mean, last time I was on, it was right before the snow hit. On that Sunday, I was at the Colts game, the final Colts game of the year. Had a great time with good people, and it was snowing on our way up, snowing on our way back, but we got home safely, and then bang, right, it hit hard. So Monday was kind of a snow day. Most people around closed their offices, schools were out, of course, and we did the same thing. We shut down our parking lot, didn't even get shoveled or scraped until later that evening on Monday. So, yeah, a lot of working from home on Monday. And then, of course, Tuesday, it would suck around on Tuesday as well. And now here we are heading into this weekend with more snow on the way, at least here in South Central Indiana, if you are a listener of local prominence, not some of the listeners that we have from different areas of the country or even different areas of the world. Believe it or not, we have people that listen from all over the place, and we can track that via the podcast because that gives us data on who's listening, where they're listening, and even some data on the demographics as well, as far as what their ages are, their race, everything. It's pretty interesting stuff. I don't pay much attention to it, but every once in a while I get forced to pay attention to it, even though I don't think it really matters to me. I'm going to show up no matter what. If any of you are listening or no one's listening, well, I guess suppose if no one's listening, I probably wouldn't do it. But I do enjoy getting out of the office into the radio station on these Thursdays. And then, of course, after it airs on Thursday night at 6 o'clock, then it goes into the podcast world, and then it will re-air here on the radio station on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., which is one of the more popular listening times. All right. So I get this USA Today now at my house. That was a gift from my wife. Thank you very much. And they pile up on me. And then I pull them out. And I'm like, is there anything interesting in here worth talking about? Well, I thought this was kind of interesting. I don't know how it would work. But I thought, okay, let's start with inflation. There was a piece here on inflation is a very personal experience. How it affects you largely depends on the products and services you consistently buy. Over the years, some of us have developed different ways to measure how inflation impacts us. For example, one person uses the grocery bag indicator. She counts the number of bags that she buys, how much she spent. The more money spent, the fewer bags equals higher inflation. Less money, same number of bags equals lower inflation. So Fed Chairman Powell also has his favorite indicator. It's called the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index, which he believes is a better portrayal of the cost of the average American. One of his favorite, one of my favorite, according to this person writing the article, was the Watch Charts Rolex Market Index, which shows how many people will pay for a Rolex watch in the secondary market. They had a chart here, so they said, as you can see, the average price for a index, average price of the index, of 30 Rolex watches closed the year at $20,000. So the average price of 30 different Rolexes in the secondary market, $20,000. That's the lowest level since the third quarter of 2020. Now, I remember going into Rolex shops when we traveled in 2020, 2021, and there were no Rolexes, right? It's like production had been completely shut down or something, and there were no Rolexes. So it makes sense that in the third quarter of 2020, that would have been the highest price for secondary market Rolexes. So the Rolex indicator suggests the worst inflation is over because now prices have come way down from the average price being $30,000 a year. Can you imagine $30,000 for a watch? No, I can't believe I've spent a lot of money on some stupid things, but to me, that's not one of them that I'm going. Now, people would say it could be an investment, and I'm not going to argue that. But if you follow the inflation tracker of Rolex watches over the years, going way, way back, it actually is a pretty good indicator of where prices are going. So not a lot of logic there. Obviously, we're not taking into consideration anything else except the Rolex watch in the secondary market. But according to that, you might check it out. Measuring inflation is more like an art, in part science. Just ask Fed Chairman Powell. He'll tell you. And here's another thing. I was trying to get my head around the math on this. In the USA Today, it says some people will get an extra paycheck this year. People looking to save money, and I'm trying to, okay, if I get paid by the hour, I guess I can see this. Okay, so people looking to save money or for a big trip or investment may want to plan around their extra paycheck months. Employees who get paid on a biweekly basis, that's every other week, can expect 2 months with a third paycheck in 2025. These months depend on the first paycheck when it comes. In a 52-week year, employees who get paid biweekly get usually 2 paychecks per month, 26 paychecks in total. Typically, employees get paid biweekly get 2 paychecks per month. But in this year, I mean, you get paid actually a couple more. So if you get paid on January 3rd, let's say, you'd get a paycheck on the 17th and the 31st. You get 3 paychecks. If you get paycheck, if let's say August 1st, August 15th, and August 29th, you have May 2nd, May 16th, May 30th. You have October 3rd, 17th, and 31st. So according to this article, this is the year you're going to get more paychecks. I don't know how that works because there's no more. You may get more paychecks, but there's not any more hours. So again, when you read stuff like this, you're like, oh, I get paid every 2 weeks, so I'm going to have more paychecks this year. I doubt it. I think it's still going to work out to be about the same. All right, that's just a little fun stuff to kind of start the show off. Like Law Group, give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Give Lance a call, 812-323-8300. And KennyBlantAuctions.com, they are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning of your estate and real estate, the sale of. Visit them online at KennyBlantAuctions.com. All right, what's up next? So the best way to withdraw from your savings. There was an article in the New York Times that came out that one of my clients brought to me and had a lot of questions about. And then after I read it, I said, you know, that article is really good because, number one, it reinforces a lot of the things that I talk about. Two, there's a few inaccuracies in there, but not many. So it was overall pretty good. I'm going to hit the highlights when I get back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I'm flying solo today. I'm going to be getting with Jim Inman, Jr., next week and start to lay out the guests that we plan to have on for at least the first, maybe 3 months of this year. But for today, you're stuck with just me. So the New York Times article that my client brought to me really was more about him asking, do we have a plan for him to withdraw money? And I'm like, have you been paying attention at all? I mean, that's kind of a rhetorical question. Of course we have a plan put together. Well, he went through some of the highlights of the article. They're just now starting to take money from their retirement accounts. That's what drew this conversation to a head. But the New York Times article, I'm going to hit some of the high points with you, and then I'm going to point out some of the areas I just don't agree with, which, you know, if that's okay, but I guess what I'm trying to tell people is when you read something, it was great he read it, right? He's paying more attention. He came in with great questions. He never has questions, so it made for a really, really productive meeting. But it talks about the retiring, and it says, so what's the best way to withdraw your savings? And so it starts off with, it's finally time to start using the money you've saved and invest, but be careful. Here's the first thing to remember about withdrawing retirement money. It's all about the cash flow. The second thing, you might want to get some help managing it. America is hitting a phase some experts call peak 65, with more than 4 million people turning 65 in this year, next year, and again in 2026. That's an average of 11,200 people every single day turning 65. Now, that, whether they're retiring or getting ready to retire, that's a huge number of people that have a significant change just about to happen with their finances. You know, after years and years of squirreling money away, you're trying to get as much money as possible. Now your job is, or my job is, to help make that money last for 30 years or maybe even longer. Because, you know, while you're working, what your primary focus on is just saving, right? I mean, that's the number one thing you can control. How much money can you put in? And, you know, the markets you can't control. You can't control a lot of other things, but you can control that. So people, that's what they're doing. They're putting the money away. And when you look at these numbers of people, most of them are married. And if you're married, you're probably married to someone close to your age. And what happens, it's, you know, late 50s, 60, and your kids are hopefully off the payroll. Maybe you're both making money. You're paying your debts down, and you're saving like crazy. And that's actually been reflected in some of the opportunities with Secure Act 2.0, where now you even have another catch-up amount after you get 60, because they recognize the fact that we have a ton of people in that age bracket that are undersaved, and they need to save more. So when you retire, it's no longer about, you know, how much money you have. It's about how much cash flow you can create. It's a total mind shift for most people. It turns out that the accumulation set phase, according to this article, and I would agree, is the easy part of retirement. When you can sock away money in an IRA or 401k, someone in their 20s or 30s, they can ride out all these ups and downs of the market with a few decades of time to go, and then gradually build a seven-figure retirement stash. But when it comes to creating a retirement paycheck, the challenge is to balance withdrawals from taxable, non-taxable accounts, money, how to claim Social Security, how to collect your pension, how to liquidate maybe some real estate or other assets, how much to leave for heirs if that's a concern for you. So according to this article, again, in New York Times, just 22% of retirees say that they take withdrawals from their retirement accounts using a formal, sustainable strategy, while nearly half, according to the survey, says we just kind of take it as we need it and as we go. So this is the part I'm going to read directly from the article. When you're tapping investments and savings accounts, it comes down to managing taxes. Yes, I gave them a big thumbs up there. With IRA, 401ks, and other tax-deferred accounts, the IRS allows retirement savers to invest now and pay taxes later. But once you retire, the later becomes now. I really like that. Now, here's what I don't really suggest. It says a recommended order of priority that focuses on prolonging tax-deferred and tax-free growth. I would agree with the tax-free growth maybe. As long as possible. That means withdrawing money from taxable savings and investment accounts first, followed by tax-deferred IRAs. Remember, it's the max. You need to take the maximum amount out of your IRA each year to take advantage of the tax bracket you're in. Otherwise, you're going to be sitting here, you know, just letting your IRA blow up or your 401k blow up, and all of a sudden, you know, you're 75, and they're like, "Hey, knock on the door. It's time to pay the piper." And you have to take required minimum distributions. They might be much, much larger than you ever anticipated by not managing the taxable, tax-free, already taxed money accordingly. So the last account they say is your Roth IRA because of the tax-free growth. If you're going to leave anything to your kids, it's much better to leave it in a Roth. That's true, but I wouldn't just ignore the fact that you have this big Roth IRA that we've so eloquently put together over years of conversions or savings. Use it. Use it when it's appropriate. I did a podcast on 2025, The Final Drive, on when do you use your Roth IRA? When do you use it? And the answer was when you want to, basically. I mean, how fun is it whenever you're going to go buy a new car and it's going to cost you $50,000? And we say, let's take 20 from the IRA because that keeps us within this realm of taxation. So we're going to pay the taxes on that. So here's your, you know, $12,000, and then we're going to take the other money, the other, you know, $38,000 from the Roth completely tax-free. That's a lot of fun. The other thing this article points out is your withdrawal rate risk. This is pretty good because it does illustrate why you have to have a systematic and sustainable plan when taking money out of retirement accounts, and that's why we preach the bucket strategy. You can also do income for income, growth for growth. That story had been dead for a long time because interest rates were so stinking low. dividend yields were not great. So how do you create enough interest in dividends to cover the expenses that you want when that kind of environment exists? It was really, really hard. So we had to go back to an old tried and true, which is more of the silo or bucketing, where you put the money you're going to need, you know, right away in something like a money market, and then money that you're going to need for the next 10 years in a very structured way, so things are maturing or coming due in a contractual sense every single year, and only the money you won't touch for 10 or 11 years is in the growth account. But I would argue that now, with interest rates still lingering high, and actually have gone a little bit higher recently, you could go back to an income for income, growth for growth approach. But I always say to people, but even if you did that, how much of that money do you have to commit to the income side? If it's like 80% or more, that's too much. You need to be at that 60 to 70% in the income, and the other could be growth. That's fine. And that's where most people end up, even when we do a bucketing plan, about 60-40 in retirement, 60% in fixed and 40% in growth. Again, that's just kind of by happenstance. That's the way it kind of works out. But this article goes on. It says, taking withdrawals in a falling market, especially near the beginning of retirement, means those losses are locked in and offset and would require bigger gains in the market later. A few years of ill-timed withdrawals could create enough of a hole in the retirees' a portfolio and give them a real risk of running out of money. This is preaching to the choir here. Here's an example they give. With $1 million, first year retiree takes 4% out, they make 10. So that grows now to 1.56 million. The next year they take 4% out, that's 42 grand. They also grow by 10. Now they're at 1.15 million, even after the 80 grand in withdrawals. But if the market heads in the opposite direction, you may be in trouble. After withdrawing 4%, 40,000, and the market loses 10%, now you're at 864 grand. The next year you take 4% or 34 grand out, because now you're taking less out. What if you still took 40 out? That makes it even worse. And the market drops another 10%. Now you're down to 746,000. So now you need a 34% gain just to get back to your original balance of $1 million. And that doesn't account for any inflation or any more withdrawals. So the options after such a financial wallop can be pretty tough. Living on less, selling other assets, drastically downsizing, reducing your lifestyle, going back to work, which is terrible, right? No one wants to hear that. Although for years I've had people walk in my office to do a review. Do I need to go back to work? I'm like, no, you're fine. You're fine. We kept the wheels on the bus. And then I like this last part. It says, balancing the many moving parts of retirement finances with all the verities of the stock market, inflation, just different life events, says you really need to meet with a financial advisor, financial planner before and continuing after retirement. Retirees only have one shot at getting this right. Just a few down years in the market can ruin your retirement. You don't want to take your 30 to 40 years of investing and have it work against you. So what I would tell people all the time, you retire once, we help people retire every single day. We'll take another break when we come back. The IRS is a little bit silent on this loss harvesting thing that I'm going to talk about when it comes to exchange-traded funds. So I'm going to get into what is loss harvesting, kind of banking your losses, even maybe understanding how stepped-up cost basis works, even within families. I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Yes, it's your money, not my money. It's your money. I was still talking to someone this week, and they're like, "I'm like, okay, here's an idea," because they're not spending any money. I mean, literally, she's living on Social Security. Her husband sadly passed away about 6 months ago. Been lifelong clients and friends, and she brought her daughter with her for this meeting because we've just pretty much been on pause, and that's okay. You know, sometimes you just don't want to make any decisions. But yeah, she had a lot of cash because of death benefits. We had to make his IRA her IRA. There was a bunch of cash. So we just really just stuck in the money market for a long time until she had her head right to come in. And so she's still young, and I'm like, yeah, you should do some things, you know. And I talked about what we did after my mom passed away with my stepdad, you know, going to California as a family, and, you know, some other fun things just to get him rolling, get his mind off of things, ours too. And she goes, I don't know if I really want to do that, like go on a cruise. I suggested like a river cruise or something cool. And I don't know. So she's not really living that just in case retirement because she's not worried about money because she has plenty of it, which I think is hilarious. And if you've never heard me give the just in case retirement talk, you should ask me to do that sometime because it makes me laugh even. I'm like, well, look. And she said, here, just invest the money I have in savings. Okay, well, we got our savings down to like $25,000. I said, here's what I'd like to do. Let me set up a plan so that we send you money every single month. And then when we get together once a year, if you've not spent that money or given that money or whatever it might be, then we can always reinvest it. And I told her, over my years of experience, that seems to make it more real when it actually is in the bank. Otherwise, you look online, you get your statements, whatever. It just feels like Monopoly money. But if you actually have the cash flow hit your account, it might give you that mental freedom, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit on getting your mindset right and the role of optimism in retirement planning. I think it's real. It makes it real. It's in your bank account. So then it's like, hey, you're taking this money. Your accounts are still holding nice and steady. Maybe it gives you the confidence to do more. So anyway, she agreed to that, and we have not sent the first check out yet or our first direct deposit, but it will happen in February. And I'll let you, if I can remember, next February, I'll let you know how that whole thing turned out. But I've had experience with that in the past, and most of the time it works. And I've got a good friend starting to take money this month and got his first check and talked to him today. I'm going to talk to him again tomorrow afternoon. Maybe get a cold beer together or something and celebrate a little bit on his rite of passage from being a solid accumulator to now someone taking money out each and every month. And he probably won't spend it either. He's not a big spender. All right, let me talk about what I was talking about before on lost harvesting. What is lost harvesting? Now, we looked at that at the end of the year, and that's in non-IRA, just regular straight-up taxable accounts. How do you take advantage of some losses? Well, you just sell, and then you have 30 days before you can buy back the same investment in theory or even buy an identical security or what they call it substantially identical security. There was an article in the Financial Planning Today, and it says IRS is silent on allowing investors to exploit an exchange-traded fund loophole, study finds. So they go, and institutions do this too, like mutual fund managers, they do it too. So they said institutional investors are harvesting exchange-traded fund losses for tax purposes, then placing their assets in highly correlated funds, regardless of the wash sale restrictions, which is that 30-day hold. Now, by the way, there are no, you can recognize a gain and go back and buy the same thing immediately, and that's resetting your cost basis, and that would be good if you had a bunch of losses that you needed to take advantage of. That would be a good way to use them up, right, is to maybe you sold a piece of property, you can use the old losses that you banked. If you sold a stock at a profit, you can use the old losses that you banked. So even if you don't have gains to offset the losses, it's fine to bank these losses, right? Bank them. Because if you don't use them immediately, you always get to write off at least $3,000 a year off of your other regular income. Then that just kind of rolls and rolls and rolls. But then, you know, if sometime down the road you do want to sell something and there is a lot of profit, you've got all these losses over here banked. But the idea of the IRS saying you can't buy something substantially identical within 30 days after selling them, but pension funds, fund managers, endowments, other institutional investors, they're doing it. They're swapping ETFs that have holdings that are literally, and then rebuying things that have holdings that are like 99% or more, the exact same thing. And it's huge. It's a huge thing. I mean, billions and billions of dollars. But I think the issue is that the IRS has never come out and said, or have specifically ruled on what constitutes substantially identical. That leaves people like us kind of to navigate the foggy legal landscape. Some seem to take regulatory silence as a tactic to say we have permission to swap exchange-traded funds that hold identical securities or even benchmark to the same index. Others would argue that if an investor's economic position has not changed after swapping an ETF, the spirit of the wash rule has been violated. So at this point, we don't know. What I got tripped up on last year was lost harvesting on bonds. So we never thought about that, right? Well, in 2022 and then again in 2023, when interest rates go up, bond values go down. So we were looking at, we were able to find bonds that were being priced at 70 cents on the dollar in the in our portfolios. Great bond, decent coupon, maybe just long maturity or something. And we were selling them and then buying even the same credit. So if we sold a bond backed by, make this up, this is just a makeup thing, Walmart, and it matured in the year 2035, and we sold it and bought a Walmart bond that matured in, you know, 2030, is that substantially identical? I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe not. Does it have different call features? Maybe, maybe not. Could I go buy just another bond of another company with the same credit quality and same coupon, same maturity? Is that substantially identical? I don't know. I mean, I think so. But again, you could do this with bonds. So many of you might still have bonds or even bond funds. Find out what your cost. You might be underwater from a cost perspective in a bond fund. What if you sold that bond fund or sold those bonds? Take the losses. You can always replace them with something similar price, similar to this, similar to that. And I think you're fine doing that. And then bank those all up because you can use them down the road. Now, the reason I say you never let a good loss go to waste. Never, ever, ever. Because losses die with you. So if I had some losses banked up and I died, my children, my wife, would receive a stepped up cost basis. But I don't have any gains. But it doesn't matter. They're going to inherit that at the date of death, and that is true even within families. So if my wife and I own something together and I died, she gets a 50% stepped up in cost basis, and that's on anything as long as we've owned it together for more than a year. But what if I was sick? And we had a farm or something that was worth a ton of money. We could put that all in my name. And then let's say I died in a couple years. I could transfer on death it right back to her, full stepped up cost basis. That's something no one talks about enough, is tax planning within the family, stepped up cost basis within the family. That's a really, really big deal. And again, give the gains to the healthy person, give the losses to the sick person, because whenever the healthy person dies with all these gains, the heirs get stepped up cost basis. The person that has the losses, make sure that the losses go to the healthy person, the gains to the sick person, because the sick person, when they die, gets stepped up cost basis. But I kind of jumbled that around a little bit too much, so if I lost you on that one, I'd be happy to have a conversation with you about it. I don't take time off. I take time off. You guys know I do some things, but you know, my evenings are for the most part open if I don't have a board meeting or something. And I randomly will make phone calls because we'll get emails and Jim will typically forward those to me first. And not as specific to Medicare or if it's specific to maybe public employees or something like that. He'll send it to me. And we'll get it answered. So go to cfci.us, contact us. You can email Jim directly or through our contact and ask a question. We'll be happy to answer it. And don't be surprised if I say, hey, do you care if we jump on the phone together? Because typically questions lead to more questions. And then you never know, when we do the question and answer show, we may use it. And what do you get for that? Nothing more than just a attaboy. All right, let's take another break. When we come back, let's talk about the mindset, the role of optimism in retirement planning. And I'm going to be attending an event, I hope, on January 22nd. That's a whole kind of course on this. But I've always been a big believer, as you guys know that know me well, of good, solid mindset. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this, but I did want to spend some time on it because when it comes to your mindset and the optimism in retirement planning, that is so important. I mean, if you have a good, solid plan that you believe in, I was listening to someone talk about planning for an upcoming football game, and the offensive coordinator has the plans of what they're going to do, what plays they're going to run, and what situations they plan to run them. And then they sit down with the quarterback and we go through them. And if the quarterback doesn't have confidence in that play, and I can relate to this. I remember even playing football in high school and college whenever a play would be ran in, because back then they'd run, you know, your receivers were running in from the sideline. They would tell you, you'd go to yourself, I know this is not going to work. And guess what? It never worked. And it wasn't maybe because it wasn't a good play, or it wasn't the right timing, or the situation wasn't right. It just, the confidence wasn't there in the quarterback to run that play effectively and make it a good play. Retirement's the same way. If you look at your plan and you don't have complete confidence in it, that it's going to work, then that's a mindset issue. Or it's a bad play, or maybe it's something you need to fix. But I'm just saying mindset is really, really important. I think mindset on just your financial plan is great. The mindset about your health, your wellness is super important, because when you think about it, there is a lot of things that go into having a great life. You know, we talked about faith, family, friends, and a fixed income stream. Boom. That's a good one to lean into as well. But I'm going to attend this conference on the 22nd, Wednesday the 22nd. I think I'm going to be in Scottsdale, so I may decide. We'll see. I think I can get a replay of it. So I don't know that I want to take a 3 p.m. Central Time timeout when I'm at Barrett Jackson in Scottsdale to listen to this. But I might. But there are some new findings around optimism in the mindset and the significance in financial planning for retirement. So I'm gonna hopefully do this, but I'm hoping that at some point I can bring this back to you, because you guys have heard me talk about this if you've been a long-time listener. Anybody can have the skill set, right? We see that all the time, especially in sports. We see that in an Indiana basketball program. Anybody then can have a will set. I really want to do this. I have the skill set. I want to do this. But it's the mindset that matters the most. It's skill set, will set, and then mindset. And I will tell you, retirement planning is really no different. And I love that about my position where I am in life, my experiences I've had, is I'm able to coach people through stuff and get their mindset right and keep it positive. And, you know, we'll do the heavy lifting on our side. You've got to be confident in what it is that we're doing, how we're doing it, why we're doing it. And then whenever you get after it, you're in great spirits. And I'm excited for everybody retiring this year. I've got a lot of people retiring this year. We just talked about how many people are turning 65. They're either getting ready to retire or they're going to be retiring, you know, this year. So we're excited. And here we are sitting here, what, 31 years now? And not in this seat. I've been doing this for 23 years on the radio. So I'm excited about it. I'm actually going to be doing a workshop next week on Thursday, the day of the radio show, called Taxes in Retirement. You might have seen a Facebook post about it. Someone asked me the other day, is this you? And I said, yes. And they never used my name, which I don't know why. But it's fun. You know, I'll show up at the library and we'll have, you know, 30 or 40 people there. And usually I know half of them, or half of them know me. And we spend about an hour and a half together going through all the things you need to know to win, because that's the theme. 2025, the final drive, what you need to know to win, squishing taxes in the way of your success in retirement. So it'll be a fun, fun time. All right, I'm going to take a break. When I come back, what have I got to talk about next? Oh, yeah. I've got some of the big themes for 2025, if I have time. I'm going to try to get through what I can. I'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, everyone. I'm glad you're back. I'm trying to keep an eye on the time here. So this was a pretty interesting thing I picked up on. It's kind of relating the challenges in 2025 and how they relate to game shows, right? The last 2 years have been good for investors, but as we step into 2025, it's a brand new round, and it might be a little more challenging. But for inspiration, we may talk about a few game shows that might make the analogy stick with you. Financial markets, they're not a game, right? But these shows, they provide an analogy for the high stakes and strategic thinking required to have good investment, successful investing in 2025. I mean, will the economy and the markets maintain their momentum? That's the million-dollar question. Our answer is probably yes, but portfolio decisions are going to need to be more discerning, right? I don't think you can just throw it up there and let it ride. I think you're going to have to be a little more selective. So we clear the board going into the new year, and here we are. And there's about 10 different themes. I don't know that I'll get through them all. But number one is optimism overload. The family feud may steal the show. Now, what we're talking about there is basically when we move into 2025, optimism is huge, from D.C. policy to the economy to earnings growth, consumer confidence, business confidence, investor confidence is all huge right now, soared, particularly since the election is over. Now, this confidence might be masking some of the underlying risk, right? There's risk out there. The magnitude of new policies and what direction that will impact the economy, both from a positive and a negative. I mean, keep in mind the congressional margins are very, very, very thin, especially in the House, right? And if you go back and look at the Trump tax cuts in 2017, when it passed, 12 Republicans in the House voted against it. So right now, we don't have a lot of wiggle room for things to get through. So nothing might happen, right? And that happened before. We've got economic growth is likely to moderate in 2025. We expect it to achieve some growth, but I don't know how big it's going to be. I mean, they're projecting right now around 2.4%. So, you know, the game show Deal or No Deal, right? I mean, that's the way it's going to feel in 2025. We got monetary policy. I mean, this is probably the newlywed game because this is a new era for us. We've never been here before. So it's going to be like a couple in the newlywed game where we need to figure out how to live in harmony with the Fed. Are they going to be able to cut rates, maintain the current expansion rates, keep employment to where it needs to be? We've got bond market jeopardy. I mean, of course, the game show Jeopardy, as you all know, the answer is a question. So in that spirit, we would say something like moderating growth, decelerating inflation, increased volatility, and Fed easing. You might say, what could drive interest rates lower? You're right. But interestingly enough, rates have gone up, not down. So we are really at a quandary here. Equities, is the price right? Are price-to-earnings ratios way too high? You know, Hollywood Square. If you think about that, what was the thing you want to do? Get that, just like in tic-tac-toe, you want to get that middle square first because you have a lot of different ways to go. Well, maybe it's not the large cap that drives it. Maybe it's more like the mid-cap stocks that might offer a little more balanced approach this year. Another one is kind of sector selection, like what sectors are going to do the best in this new, maybe new environment, which we don't know yet, right? We don't know what's going to get through, what's not going to get, what deregulations, what tariffs, what deportations. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff going on, and we don't know anything yet. We may change the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. We may get a Greenland as a new territory or Canada as a new state. Isn't it funny listening to all this stuff? I mean, it's outrageous, right, at times, but it does give you the sense of, man, we don't know what's going to be going on, so we need to really be on top of things. But we need to get back to basics, and that's Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Just follow long-term themes, focus on sectors with the best earning potential, and that's what you have to do. And then also get rid of the weakest link. You know, what is the weakest link? Well, the U.S. continues to be the strongest link due to economic growth, significant higher earnings growth, more dynamic corporate leadership. But international has just lagged, so maybe international is going to continue to be the weakest link, although we've had a little spurt here and there recently. And then, you know, you could get into a minute to win it. You can get into Wheel of Fortune. Let me check my time here real quick so I don't run over. But I don't have time for all that as I check my time. But it's fun stuff to talk about. And I'm just saying we're preparing for the challenges ahead. Keep in mind the expression that applies to all game shows and certainly to financial markets. You've got to be in it to win it. You got to play to win, right? You got to play to win. So stay focused and committed. That's going to be the key themes for 2025. All right, guys, I'm going to take a quick break, come back, and wrap this show up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. We wrap up this show Thursday night, 6 p.m., Saturday morning, 9 a.m., always on WGCLradio.com. And then after the Thursday night, running, then it gets out to the world in the podcast. So I know many of you listen to it that way, and I appreciate that very, very much. I enjoy when people say, I was hearing you or listening to you on your podcast, and I'm like, okay, is that the podcast, the 2025 Final Drive? Which what we typically do is take some segments from these shows that are related to taxes, and we plug them into a short podcast. So if this person just wanted to hear about the lost harvesting and stepped up cost basis within family, they might pull that out and put that in and make that its own little podcast. But I think most of you, when you say, I heard you on the podcast, mean that you're listening to the show, which is great, which is completely great. All right, so January is going to be an interesting month for me. So I already mentioned I was going to be gone around the week of the 20th. So we'll have to get worked out. I think Doug Hughes is going to be sitting in on that show, maybe with Jim as well for a Q&A show. And then the following week, we will be – so it's funny because I turned 55. When I do the show next week, I will officially be 55. And I don't know that that's a big deal, but it is kind of like a big deal to me because it's starting to set in. Like, I just turned 50, right? Now I'm 55. And before you blink your eyes, you're going to be 60. And people listening to this show are like, I mean, you're preaching to choir, Hayes. I mean, I get it. I'm 60. I'm 70, Hayes, and I mean, I can't believe I'm 70. I hear it all the time. But most of my friends are around my same age, within a year or two either way. But we have one close friend that's about 5 years younger. Well, she turns 50 in February, so she wanted to do a big thing, and she's the last one we're welcoming to the fifth floor, which if you guys remember, what the fifth floor of the old hospital used to be. That's where they sent people that had some mental issues to get cleared up. And that's what I always say to people when they turn 50, welcome to the fifth floor. And they either know what I'm talking about or they don't know. But either way, I think it's so funny. But we're going to go to Mexico. So we're going to go down to Cancun for just a few days, so an all-inclusive. I'm excited about that. It's about 4 or 5 days I'll be gone. But then after that, you know, the travel's not real crazy this year. It's not like in the past where I've been doing crazy things like going to Argentina or going to Tanzania. I don't have any of those crazy things planned. Maybe a trip to – I will go to Canada the end of May for walleye fishing. That's a must-do trip. I may go fishing in the Gulf of Mexico again. I haven't decided if I'm going to do that or not. But, yeah, but we're going to have some really good shows. We're going to line this thing up with Jimmy, get some good guests in this year, and have a lot of fun. So I hope everyone enjoyed today's program, and I'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.